Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I'm your host, Mark.
And I'm Yucca.
And today we are going to talk about ancestors, because it is Hallows season, Samhain season, and ancestry and remembering those that have gone before us is a big deal for us at this time of year. So I'm excited about this episode, and looking forward to a great conversation with you, Yucca.
Likewise. Yeah. So I think we were going to start with the question of, well, what is an ancestor, or who were our ancestors?
Yeah, and that's a complicated question because honestly, people will have different answers. There are those who will go with this straight, very narrow kind of definition. Well, your ancestors are the people who had sex before you and, you know, led to your progenation, and therefore that's who it is. So it's your parents and your grandparents and your great-grandparents and so forth and so on. I don't really see that as ancestry myself so much. Not that I disrespect those connections, but I tend to have a bigger picture view of what constitutes an ancestor. How about you?
Yeah, so it can mean many things to me. One is the literally who'd I get my genetic information from? Those are my ancestors. My parents and their parents and theirs and theirs and theirs. But I also think of ancestors as, well, one, with all that genetic information, it goes way back past our human before we were humans. So we didn't used to be humans. We used to be a lot of different things. We can go all the way back. I think we've talked about Luca a couple of times together on this podcast. So Luca last,
huh? Luca though, in case somebody hasn't heard a previous episode, why don't you explain what Luca is?
Sure. So Luca stands for the last universal common ancestor. So as far as we can tell, all life on Earth, as we define life, as something which is able to self-replicate, that can undergo Darwinian evolution, we all are genetically related. And if you go back far enough, there is a point at which there was a single organism who we are all descended from. Now, this organism is not the first organism. It probably lived sometime between the end of the Hadean, or the Hadean, both are correct pronunciations, eon. So right as the oceans were forming, the earth was cooling down, the late heavy bombardment was finishing up, so about 4 billion years ago or so. And everyone, the tree outside your window, the bacteria in your gut, the mitochondria in your cell, your cat, me, you, everything, all life on Earth, this was the last grandmother of all of us, right? And just on sort of the amazingness, for every single one of us listening, everything that is alive now, there is an unbroken chain of life between you and whoever Luca was. Life has never stopped between that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, pieces have stopped, but that chain that continues to you has continued. So that is every one of those pieces back to Luca is an ancestor. But I also think of ancestors as anyone whose death allowed for my life is my ancestor as well. So some of those may be beings whose generation level is, they might have been born or hatched or come into existence even after I did, but their death allows for my life. So yeah. This is, the bull that we eat each year, every single carrot that I've eaten, but also the organisms that died to be consumed, that the soil could exist, for the trees to grow that make the oxygen that I breathe. The death that allows for my life, the lives of those death are also what I consider ancestors.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, I really agree. Ancestry is bound up with our concept of death. The idea of ancestry is, well, your ancestors, they're dead. And yes, that's true. Because death is the means to new life. Mm-hmm. That said, we have, and in many cases, there are people who are your ancestors in terms of their enabling your existence, who don't have any genetic relationship with you at all, other than deriving from Luca.
Yeah, or the human bottleneck, you know.
The soldiers who kept the invading army from overrunning your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother's village are your ancestors, because they enabled that great X number grandmother to have a child that survived. And what this means we see is that ancestry really binds us together. Rather than being this narrow sort of focus of, oh, you know, my people are named Green and they go back this way, and it's this very narrow sort of definition. Instead, ancestry is something that pulls us all together in a family of humanity and a family of life on Earth, even more broadly. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about ancestors, and we want to talk about honoring specific individual people, because we know that that's an element of ancestor veneration, which is one of the things that happens at this time of year. But let's start with the fact that when you really understand ancestry, what it means is we're all on this big mud ball together. We're all connected.
Yeah. Or may I suggest a different word than on? We in
of it.
Or part of. Yeah. We are it. We are Earth. Yeah.
Yes. Every one of us is an assemblage of molecular pieces that life has created. And when life is done with us, it will dismantle us and create something else.
Yeah.
And that's fundamentally what is happening here on planet Earth. Period. Full stop. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
Life is creating assemblages, and then when they're done, disassembling them and creating new stuff.
And pieces, and we get to add more to the material that gets to be part of that, the ingredients.
Yes.
Right? Because we go back and we start with after the Earth finished accreting, there not a lot of Earth was alive yet.
Right.
Right. We literally were just a big ball of molten rock and metal. And now life has diligently been adding more and more and more and more, and life itself is spreading.
To bring us water, which is helpful.
Yes, that has been great. And a lot of interesting material in the literature about that. We had assumed for quite some time that it was probably comets. And we now think that it actually was a particular subpopulation of asteroids that are the source of most of the water, which is really very interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. So they come from closer in the neighborhood.
Probably. Yeah. So still a little bit beyond the frost line, but still, but not comets. So it's very, all of that stuff is continuing to change. So, well, our understanding, what happened happened, but our understanding of what happened is continuing to evolve.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So, ancestors, we all have them. I'd like to take a hard left turn now and talk about ancestry when you're not so happy about your ancestry. Because that's where I am, honestly. I'm estranged from my family. I don't talk to any member of my blood family. My father was an abusive narcissist. My mother was a miserable drunkard. And a part of what was necessary for them to get through the process that they were going through was to define the truth teller in the family as the black sheep, the one who had to be expelled. And that was me. I was the one who said, wait a minute, you just did that thing and that's not an okay thing. So I had to be ejected. And I'm a lot more sanguine about that now than I was when I was in my 20s. Hmm. I understand that that was what they had to do. And I feel compassion and pity for the lives that they had to live. But I still don't consider them my ancestors in the way that I do other people that I chose rather than that I was related to. Mm-hmm. There are people in my life who have died and people who are not in my life who have died. Like Nelson Mandela, for example. I mean, he spent 20 years in a prison. 20 years in a prison being abused and humiliated. And he came out and he refused to be vengeful. He refused to embrace retribution as the path of how he would then make himself whole. He already knew that he was whole. Hmm. And he proceeded to make South Africa into a multiracial state. And honestly, I'm not that patient. I'm not that tolerant of abuse. I don't think that I necessarily could have been him, but when I look at him, I admire him utterly as an activist, as an advocate for a better world, as a human being. And so Nelson Mandela is my ancestor. I honor him utterly. I could not feel more reverence for him if he were my blood ancestor. That doesn't make any difference at all. I could not feel more reverence for who he was simply by being who he was. Mm. So I know that we have listeners who are in wildly differing situations. We have folks who are deeply invested in their ethnic ancestry. I'm Italian. I'm Greek. I'm Slovakian. I'm Swedish. I'm Irish. I'm Welsh. We have those listeners. And then we have the folks that have been kind of spun out of their ethnicities, their family histories, into the wide, cold world. And what I want to say to you is the people who love you, the people who support you, who you've accreted around you, your gathered family, they are every bit as much your family as anybody that shares genetics with you. They are absolutely as much family. And so when one of them dies, they're your ancestor. They are absolutely your ancestor. And it doesn't matter whether it was somebody that you met when you were 30 years old, does not matter. They are your ancestor if you lose them, because they contributed to who you are and they were there when you needed them to be there.
Yeah. It seems like a common thread between these different ideas of ancestorhood that we've been talking about comes back to that feeding or nourishment aspect. Right? Yep. You were talking about the chosen family. Those are those who feed you, who've nourished, who allow for you to be you.
Yes. Yes. And in an ideal world, your blood family would fold in right behind you and say, yes, you be you. You be you as weird as you want, as queer as you want, as geeky as you want. You be you. But sadly, in many families, that's not what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really important for us to understand ancestor veneration at this time of year as something that doesn't have to be about those people who didn't have your back when you needed them. It can be about those people who did have your back, even though you weren't related to them.
Yeah.
Except in that very broad sense that we're all descended from Luca.
And of course, not that the genetic line, not that you have to exclude that if that's there for you, right? If that's something that you do have the positive association with, that it could be either or it could be both.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. Because many people have families who are fundamentally on your side, which is a great thing. I mean, that's a great thing to have a family that will look at you in all your unique strangeness and say, yeah, you go, you do that. I don't understand it necessarily, but I don't care. You go and you do that because that's you and I love you and that makes it okay.
Yeah.
I am in awe of families that are like that because I don't have any experience of one.
And it isn't necessarily always a one or the other kind of situation, right? You can have pieces of a family or areas where people really work well together and other places where there's going to be dysfunction.
For sure. For sure. I mean, we hear so many stories about, you know, the grandparents or the uncle and aunt who are fundamentalist Christians and just can't tolerate someone who is a non-theist pagan, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, that is so missing the humanity, but they still have to live with that. They have to negotiate that. And I think one of the most awful and painful things that I see discussed in the Atheopagan Facebook group or in conversations that I have with people is trying to walk the knife edge between those two things, trying to be able to go to Thanksgiving dinner and not be humiliated by the statements of those who don't approve of us. It's a horrible thing. And I have tremendous compassion for those in our community that suffered through those things. Ancestry can be a source of great pride and elevation, or it can also be a source of sorrow and misery. And so I encourage those who are in the latter category to think about who are the ancestors that really mean something to you? Who inspires you? Is it Andrea Rich? Is it Emma Goldman? Is it Martin Luther King? Is it there are people who lived lives that you respect,
mm-hmm.
that you celebrate. Those are your ancestors too.
Yeah. And so is that little shrew creature that that made it 66 million years ago.
Yes. Yes. That's the other thing that we need to remember, is that we have our individual suffering and struggle. And then there's also this big picture thing. And this time of year, Hallows or Samhain or Halloween or whatever you choose to call it, is a great time to think about big history.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the last four generations that you can track back, or the last 10 generations you can track back. I'm descended from people that sailed over on the Mayflower. That is not interesting to me. What's more interesting to me is that I have tracked the experience and accomplishments of those since the Mayflower leading to me, and none of them were in the least bit exemplary or interesting or inspiring at all. So I don't worry about all that stuff. What I worry about is, what does ancestry mean to me in the context of the big picture of life on Earth?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a multicellular organism. Go me.
Most life's not, by the way.
Life is not multicellular organisms, but I get to be a multicellular organism which is self-aware and can look up at the stars and understand what they are and can examine life on Earth and maybe comprehend some of what it is. And that's extraordinary. And I'm given that by my ancestors.
Yeah.
I am served up on the platter of the world by my ancestors.
And hey, an event before becoming multicellular, we had to become eukaryotes. And that is a process of endosymbiosis, where we had our ancestors who were, and we don't know how many times this took place, but probably one little archaean cell that said, hey, little bacteria. Well, maybe we were trying to eat them. Who knows? But they got inside of our ancestor's body. So somebody else, a little bacteria, came inside of our ancestor's cell.
Prokaryotic ancestor.
Yep. So when we were prokaryotes, then we took in another prokaryote that became eventually mitochondria. And they still have their own DNA, by the way.
Yes, they do.
That's an ancestor we can track back to, actually, is the mitochondrial Eve. We can track back because mitochondria is only passed through the maternal line because it's in the egg, right? The sperm doesn't contribute, at least we don't think it contributes any of the mitochondria. So we can track that back. But anyways, way back, let's go back into the Archean eon where this little friendship happened. Mm-hmm. Where we said, we literally blended two different domains of life came together to then eventually make a different domain, which is still the tiny, tiny minority of any life that is part of this planet. In the past and the present,
yes.
We just are completely outnumbered.
And all of this goes back to the themes that we were talking about in the first place, one of which is the persistence of life in assembling new structures, and the other of which is the emergence of new forms. Because the prokaryote plus the plus the eukaryote was not 1 + 1 = 2. It was 1 × 2. It was 2 × 2 = 4. It was an extraordinary step forward, and suddenly we had multicellular organisms.
And well, it took a few suddenly hundreds of millions of years, but still suddenly, right?
Well, from our standpoint, it was suddenly.
Yeah.
Because we're very short-term creatures, honestly. We don't live very long, and we haven't been around very long. And that's an important thing for us to keep in mind when we think about ancestry. We have not been here very long. Humanity is about 200,000 years old.
Yeah. And
that is so little time in the context of a 4.5 billion-year-old planet. It is so little time. And yet we've achieved so much. And look at us. Look at us, the jewel case of humanity. Look at what we've accomplished. Look at Mozart and Einstein and Mandela and I could go on with names for hours. Look at the extraordinary things we have been able to achieve and accomplish as humans here on Earth. When Proconsul, 250,000 years ago, was walking on his knuckles and eating nuts. And that was pretty much it.
Yeah. So, yeah, bringing that back, this is a great time to really explore that. And the phases that Earth has gone through, that's ended too, right? Those phases are gone to get to us, and we will be gone, and somebody else will be here, will be us, not us, will be Earth one day.
Yes. Well, and that's an interesting thing, because ancestry, as we think about it, has to do with what is lost.
Mm-hmm.
And there's what is lost in the last 100, 200, 300 years. And then there's what is lost in the last 100 million, 200 million, 300 million years. But another way of looking at the evolution of life on Earth is the story of what has been lost. Over and over and over again, what we have inherited is a history of death that has honed us. It has created us out of the ongoing onslaught of death that is the nature of life on Earth. So you can choose to look at it both ways. You can look at it as life climbing upon itself, emerging, 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 wonderful, wonderful. And you can look at it as death, clawing it away, clawing it away, clawing it away over and over again. And both of those things are true.
I keep a trilobite fossil on my desk as a reminder of that.
I keep trilobite fossils that I found in a quarry in Ohio when I was 9 on both my upper world altar and my lower world altar.
Hmm.
Because one of them is a memory of an event in my life and the extraordinary feeling of having discovered this cool thing. And then the other is the underworld. And yes, the trilobites aren't with us anymore. They did great. They for 100 million years. More, actually.
Yeah, more. Yeah.
More. And they were prolific, and there were so many different kinds of them, and there were those that were 2 feet long, and there were those that were an inch long, and they were just...
With the cute little eye stalks coming up, and some of them that didn't, and...
Multi... eyes and all the stuff. They were so cool. They were an amazing organism. And they're gone.
Yeah.
Such is the story of life on Earth. And it's entirely possible that some future creature, 2 billion years from now, will look back at humans and say, wow, they were so cool. They made music and they made technology and they built buildings and they made computers and they created international communication networks. And they
look, I have one of their skulls.
And look at their skulls. And they're gone.
Bones. Yeah.
That's possible. It's more likely than not, actually. The odds that we would persist for billions of years are really pretty low. Nobody ever has on this planet, except the bacteria.
Well, and that gets into how you define species, and the way that we define species doesn't work once you leave beings who reproduce sexually, which is the tiny minority, right? The fact that we are sexual, that we reproduce sexually, and that hasn't happened for most of life. That's very, very recent. But when you start talking about organisms who have horizontal gene transfer and all of that, I mean, it's just very different.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know, we really could say that they are the same as they were then. There's certainly their form, their physical form hasn't changed particularly much, but that's not what bacteria and archaea are about. No. They're about what they do.
Right.
They exist on a very different scale. It's not about the form, the morphology. It's about it's about their chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And the conditions of Earth have changed incredibly over these time periods.
And they've evolved to live with them.
Yeah. And our perception of these other organisms as being somehow less evolved than us is frankly quite false. Some of them may not be as complex, but evolution has acted upon all of, we have all continued to evolve and adapt and change.
Oh, now you've struck a sore point with me, which is the idea of primitive people. The concept that people who live with Stone Age technology are somehow less evolved.
Yeah.
So angry about this, because no, they've had as much evolution as everybody else. Their cultures have evolved just as much as everybody else. So you cannot tell me that people who live in the Amazon basin are less evolved than people who live in Paris. They're not.
Yeah, they're different. Yeah, different cultures with different conditions. But yeah, I think that we're probably quite in alignment on that. And I think that we can extend that beyond humans just to life.
To right? creatures generally. I mean, yeah. Today's cyanobacteria are not identical to those of hundreds of millions of years ago. I mean, to some degree, there are organisms which are kind of caught in a backwater and have stopped evolving, like coelacanths. And those are more the exception than the rule,
mm-hmm.
because they developed a form that was competitively successful and they just kind of stopped evolving. But that's
it's not that they would have fewer mutations. It's that when they did have the mutations, those didn't work with the environment, so they weren't selected for. So what continues to be selected for is what is working in their environment.
Right. So they stay the same.
Yeah.
Which, in my understanding of the nature of life on Earth, is an exception rather than a rule.
Yeah.
Most creatures continue to be subject to the forces of natural selection, and they continue to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
we are way, way far afield. Topic of ancestry.
I don't think so. I think this is it. Right. This is all. That's the thing. We talk about, we're going to say this topic, but it's all connected in.
Of course it is.
It's all overlapping, and it's, where are we going to draw the particular line? Well, we are choosing where to draw that line, but that's what it is. It's a choice that we're imposing on it.
Well, and that is a core value of paganism specifically, and of paganism generally, and of non-theist paganism, including atheopaganism specifically, which is the idea that it is all connected. It's all a fabric, and it's all pulling, the threads are all pulling on one another and causing effects. So you can't look at anything in a vacuum and say, well, this is it. You can say, well, this is it, and then this is its context, and this is the context of its context, and these are the forces exerting themselves on the context of its context. And nothing stays quite discrete, mm-hmm. which brings me to the quantum world, where everything's blurry and kind of smeared out. In biology, which is not the quantum world, it's a relativistic classic physics world. In biology, things are smeared out as well. It's very hard to distinguish an organism from its living environment, because I'm an animal and I'm breathing air as we speak. I'm breathing air, I'm transpiring water and salt, and I'm going to ingest food. I am blurred into my environment. I am not just a discrete billiard ball bouncing around in the universe.
Well, and then if we go inside you, I mean, you're an animal, but where does the animal and where does its microbiome, where's the distinction between that? Right? There are more bacterial cells in your body than animal cells.
Absolutely. So 50% plus of me is not me.
Yeah, and by the way, if we took them away, you'd die.
Sure.
Right. There's a few of them that you could get by without, and we see that. But no, you can't. Your digestive system doesn't work if you get rid of them.
And then you die.
Yeah. Well, and then the ones that were left will eat you. And you go on to be something else.
Something else. Exactly. So we are these creatures who have an idea of ourselves as being discrete and individual, because our minds, the operation of our brains and central nervous systems, create an individual sort of thinking pattern that we think of as ourselves. But what supports that is utterly blended into the environment around us, completely smeared into the rest of the cosmos. And this, as pagans, I would say generally, but specifically as non-theist pagans who are just focused on trying to get as much of a grip on reality as possible, is a profound lesson for us. It's a profound lesson. It tells us things about what we eat. It tells us about the sacredness of our shit, mm-hmm. which is something that pagans don't tend to want to talk about, but it's food for the universe. What passes through us is food for the universe.
Yeah.
It makes living beings out there in the world. Everything is sacred. Everything is sacred, including shit, which is the thing that we're most programmed to be disgusted by, but it's still sacred because it makes life in the world. I'm ranting.
That's what we're here for, Mark. So we, you know, I that makes us the ancestors for others.
Yes.
Right. And And some of us may be genetic ancestors for humans to come, and some of us may not. But all of us are or will be ancestors for more life to come.
Yes. And our ancestry can follow two general paths: our genetics and our works. What we put out into the world, what the changes that we make in the world, are ancestry. So Nelson Mandela's example, even though I'm not South African, is still very powerful for me. And I have taken inspiration from that. And I find that I'm very moved by that. I see ancestry in him for me. I am not a father. I will not be a father. But Yucca, you are. Mm-hmm. No, you're a mother. You're not a father. You're a mother.
Well, I'm a parent.
You're a parent. All right. We'll go with that. But so for me, what I put out into the world, whether it's the Ethiopagan path or the activism that I've done in my local region to try to make things better for the local environment, the land, the water, the creatures, those are the things that I expect to leave behind and that I hope will be meaningful. For you, you have children who you will hand culture onto, who you have handed genetics onto, as well as contributing to paths in the world that you hope to see promulgated. And both of those are ancestry.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got that worked out.
And you know, that's one of those things I love to think about while sitting outside and just taking a look at the stars. That's one of those moments in which I feel tiny and insignificant and incredibly important and part of everything. Mm-hmm. And that really, that sense ties in for me to the idea of thinking about all of those who we are going to be the ancestors to.
Sure. I feel the same, although I feel like my capacity to be an ancestor is a lot more tenuous because I'm not going to be a blood ancestor to anyone. But that said, as I get older, I'm getting more and more comfortable with the idea that it's also okay if everything that I was and everything that I did and everything that I stood for fades away. Because there are larger forces at play here. There are larger forces of history. And I believe I see in the trajectory of human history that we are becoming more just and more kind despite the recent backlash. And that's enough for me. That's what I hope for. On the other hand, if 100 years from now, my book is a bestseller and there are Ethiopagans in the millions everywhere, I think that'd be great too.
That'd be pretty great. Yeah. Well, Mark, thank you.
Thank you so much, Yucca. I so enjoy these. This one really roamed afield. But I really, I so appreciate your mind and your perspectives and just really love talking with you.
Likewise. Yeah. Now, before we finish up, we did want to make a note to folks who are in the United States. Did you want to take it from here, Mark?
I'd be happy to. Yeah. Folks who are in the United States, we're about to vote. And I would just urge you, first of all, to do that, to embrace your civic responsibility, to stick up your hand and say, this is what I stand for, which we get an opportunity to do every few years. And many have died for that right. Many have suffered for that right. And it is not responsible of us to shirk it,
given
the suffering that's happened in order to enable us to have that right.
And I think it's not just a right, but it really is a duty. And I think it really is a duty, that rights come with duties.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's actually the ninth Aetheopagan principle, which is that rights come with responsibilities.
Yeah. And,
it's all great to be very excited about your rights and how much nobody should tell you what to do. But at the same time, there are obligations that we have to our broader society, and that is one of them. So please go out and vote. Vote for kindness, vote for inclusiveness, vote for the environment, vote for the climate, vote for a better future.